I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Mike Fiers, a former Astros pitcher, came out and told The Athletic that the team in the 2017 season when they won a World Series was using video to steal signs and to get an advantage on their opponents all the way to a World Series title. The Astros have said they're going to launch their own investigation. Major League Baseball presumably will as well. We're saying that they got to go hard in the paint here to make sure this never happens again. You cannot allow teams to think, well, if we get caught, it's okay because the only thing that'll happen is fill in the blank.
Yeah, if you just make them pay a fine, you just bought a World Series or 108 wins for $2 million.
Right.
Not enough.
So the biggest fine imaginable, I don't even know what that would be, and frankly, I don't care, but you fine them all the money. That's a start. I think you dock them maybe the next 3 years' worth of first-round picks. Now, this is a team that does really well in the draft. Now, you could say, well, they're drafting at the bottom of the first round as well. Okay, then you could go with a couple rounds, first three rounds as far as I'm concerned. And I think you can take away international bonus money.
That's in my list,
which
too.
They use a lot of money internationally. You look at their player that they just, as a rookie of the year, they didn't bring him in initially, Yordan Alvarez. The Dodgers did to professional baseball in the States. They traded for him. But he is a Cuban guy who won the Rookie of the Year award. They're pretty good in Latin America as well. So I would dock them a lot of international money so they basically can't sign guys for a year or two. I would dock a bunch of draft picks. I would make it almost impossible for them to continue building and developing what they have for the next couple of years. And while I wouldn't necessarily ban anybody in the front office from Major League Baseball or fire anybody or kick anybody out, I think I would suspend some of the high-ranking people who knew, whoever I find out that is, for major chunks of next season. Maybe, I don't know that it's got to be a full season, but several months, you know, for the entire offseason, something like that, as they're making all these decisions. I think you got to levy the biggest sanctions you ever have.
Yeah, again, the Braves, John Coppola was banned for life for their offense. I don't know that I'm approaching that for Lou now, but he's getting suspended majorly for me.
I don't know if this should matter. I know we live in a world where it does. John Coppola is not Jeff Luhnow, if that makes any sense.
No, so of course it does.
It's not easy. That's probably the wrong word, and I feel bad saying it. But it's a lot easier to tell John Coppola, see you later, than it is Jeff Luhnow, who's been great with the Cardinals, great with the Astros, won a World Series, built the best team in baseball.
So my point is I'm suspending him a lot. And then because he's in charge of what – if he is – I didn't know – You need to know what your team is doing. So it's under your watch. You're getting suspended a bunch. You're wearing this.
Remember, they already had an assistant GM fired in the last 6 weeks.
For being a horse's ass.
For being an idiot.
And then whoever knew, according to my investigation, they're getting suspended. What I'm doing is docking them three first, just like you said. I'm cutting their international bonus money by 50% for the next three seasons as well. Then the other way to try to drive this home is everybody's got the competitive balance tax. There's no salary cap per se. It's a de facto salary cap, right? With that competitive balance threshold, theirs gets lowered by $30 million for me for 3 years. I'm going to make it more difficult for them to build. They had the second highest payroll in baseball this year behind the Red Sox. They were over $205 million.
What you're saying is basically they still get to spend what they want, but they get penalized at a rate $30 million lower than everybody else.
Yes.
When the Nats are trying to stay under the luxury tax, mm-hmm. Whatever that number is for the Astros, it's $30 million lower.
Yeah, let's just say it's $200 million for everybody but the Astros. Theirs is $170. That's a fine.
Okay.
I'm loving.
I like that.
I need to rattle the cage here to make sure everybody understands.
Let's go to Reese in Baltimore. Reese, what do you make of this? What would you do if you were baseball?
What's up, guys? As always, y'all are the best, man. Love listening to the show.
Appreciate
you,
pal.
Thank you.
So I had originally called in when y'all had opened the lines for Kaepernick, and all I was going to say is that the Washington Nationals are 2019 World Series champions.
Thank you very much.
And it's amazing.
Thank you very much.
So I'm so glad you changed the topic. My thoughts, honestly, like you said earlier, Grant, it just makes me that much more jacked up that we beat them, if in fact they were cheating. It makes me dislike Bregman and his four fingers even more. As far as the punishment, I'm with you guys. Like, MLB has to attack this. The Astros can't attack it on their own. And I think, like you said, man, lay the hammer down as hard as possible and make sure this doesn't happen again. So
yeah, if you don't, it will, right? If you don't crush this team for this, someone's going to do it. Now, teams might be filming sidelines like the Patriots once did, and we don't know it. Clubs are always trying to get a competitive advantage. The thing you cannot stop, no matter how hard you try, is the skirting of the line, you know, the cutting of the corner, the walking as close up as you can without getting in trouble. It's just too competitive a business in an industry. It's too hard to win. Everyone's going to be doing that. But what you can do is make sure that when someone gets caught, you make it so obviously wrong what they did and so big a punishment that you think long and hard about doing what that club just did. They have to do that here. Kurt in Germantown, what's up? How are you?
Doing well, fellas. Yeah, I originally was just calling to talk about it, period. You know, like Danny said, I don't have to beat this for baseball fans. Gamesmanship has always been there. What you can do with your body, your eyes, your brain is all part of strategic sports. Ever since the first curveball got thrown, we've been having the debate about what's acceptable. You know, when you have Hall of Famers like Gaylord Perry or Whitey Ford, who admitted to doctoring the ball, you know, it's been going on and on and on forever. But I think where you have to draw the line, like they did eventually with roids, and when you talk about what should be done, it made me think of the first drug enforcement, which was so weak that only an idiot wouldn't have gotten around it. And then after that, when it became one of the toughest, you know, in professional sports. So I'm just going to kind of echo you guys and say, whatever it is, it has to be the absolute hammer that bans for life can come down if individual culpability can be established, which could be hard in something like this, but it needs to be there.
See, I'm such a second and third chance guy. I'm never going to be the ban for life guy. I hate that. But if you found out that like someone ordered that or something like that, even though I wouldn't do it, I could understand a group of people saying, that's punishable by kicking you out of baseball. I wouldn't go that route. I don't think you will. Like he said, things like this are done normally in back alleys with shadows. This is not done where there's like a...
Brazenly.
Not only that, but there's not going to be like a memo from Jeff Luno to someone in print that says, hey, make sure we set up the camera just so. People watch their backs a little bit when they're doing stuff like this. Steven and Chantilly, how are you?
Boys, I can't tell you how happy I am to be talking about this rather than Washington Redskins shenanigans. So thank you. I got to say, I honestly believe that MLB needs to come down so hard that we're talking lifetime bans for senior executives. There's no way to punish them individually, and there's no way these things happened without at least some sort of knowledge. This can't happen again. It will just stain the sport. We banned 8 guys for life for gambling on a baseball game. This is so far beyond that. We're talking about possibly altering a World Series.
So that was 100 years ago, what you're talking about. And they didn't just gamble on a game. To my knowledge, they threw the game.
They threw it. Yeah, they
so
fixed it.
I would say that that's worse than this. But your call was very good and appreciate it. Someone just tweeted me, though. I wanted to get to this real quick. This is great. At Grant H. Paulson on Twitter for me, at Funny Danny for you. They asked, you know, if you're talking about bans and guys getting in trouble and executives being on the hot seat, what about people who have moved on? Remember, my guy, Mike Elias, now running the Baltimore Orioles, was maybe the number 2 in command during 2017. Like, so if you left the college program
out,
and you're somewhere else now, are you just okay that they did all these bad things and all these shenanigans happened while they were there?
There's no
or does
great,
that stink follow you?
Yeah, there's no great way to punish. I mean, think about like the years later, with USC. They're like, you guys totally cheated. Reggie Bush was illegal. Reggie Bush is in the NFL making millions.
Right.
He's like, oh, no.
Pete Carroll's on his sixth job.
What a terrible fine for me. But so that you punish the university, right? And the guys that are there then just get the brunt of it, which sucks. It's never been fair. I don't know what you do there. But to me, you find out who is involved. And if it involves that guy, you can punish that guy, too, for all I care. I mean,
now,
to me,
I don't think you punish the Orioles, for the record. Like, in other words, if you find out Elias, and this is all hypothetical and speculative,
right?
But if you find out Elias knew what was going on or was somehow involved in the process, you don't then dock picks from the Baltimore Orioles because they hired the guy not knowing that.
Right, you punish that guy.
Exactly. He's in trouble. He has to pay a fine or he has to sit out for X amount of months or whatever it is. Anthony in Fairfax, you're on the fan. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Love the show.
What's up, man?
Thank you.
I think this is not the first incident with Luno. I think if you guys remember, right after he left the Cardinals, they found out that he was hacking their computers, trying to gather information about their international prospects and their pitching prospects for trades. So I just think this is who he is. He finds every advantage, and you know, when he's caught, they send out some bogus statement about, oh, we'll look into it. I think this is punishable with banned for life because it's a track record at this point, and it's not fair to the other teams, or I won't say fair because they're all, you know, big boys, but, you know.
Well, it's not fair if they're doing that. Now, again, the Astros have done a bunch of things they've got caught doing over the last few years. That's why there's smoke here. The Astros getting hacked, you can't blame Jeff Luno for that. The Cardinals hacked Jeff Luno and the Astros after he became a executive with the Astros. Now, if you're saying he was with that organization and maybe they were doing that with other teams before, you could say that if you want to. I'm not saying that. I have no idea. But I'm just not adding that to the pile, so to speak.
Right.
Because he came from a place that knows he's really smart and hacked him after he left. I'm not pinning that on him. 800-636-1067 is the number. John Clayton writes for the Washington Post, longtime professor at ESPN on the NFL, going to join us at 11:30. Next, the college football playoff rankings are out. Where are the Fighting Joe Burrows? Where's Alabama? Listening to the Fan. An amazing weekend of college football has come and gone. We now have a updated, brand new college football playoff ranking that came out last night. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to the Fan. We'll hop up a level and talk NFL ball with John Clayton, including who's his MVP right now: Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, or somebody else perhaps. That's coming up in about 10 minutes right here on G&D. But here's your updated college football playoff rankings, Danny. LSU, 9-0, who by far have had the toughest schedule of all these teams.
That's the resume, man.
I think they've beaten four ranked teams now, most of them handily. They just handed Alabama a loss in a shootout. 9-0, they are number one, and I think deservedly so at the top of the board. Ohio State, 9-0, not nearly as difficult a schedule as LSU, but the same record. Second, Clemson is third with the best record in college football among the elites. They're 10-0, but if you want to talk about teams that haven't really played anybody, I feel like every single week when I look at Clemson in my pick'em pool, they're like -27.5 or something. I mean, it just doesn't seem like the level of competition's on the same level as some of these SEC clubs or Big Ten teams. Georgia, 8-1, ranks fourth. So right now today, if the playoffs started, you'd have Jake Fromm and the Georgia Bulldogs against Joe Burrow and LSU, and then you'd have a Clemson-Ohio State matchup with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields going head-to-head. Just four of the best quarterbacks in the nation, four of the elite-level blue-blood programs.
Yeah, how about it?
Not pictured, though, Alabama. Alabama, for just the fifth time since 2014 when this started, outside of the CFP top four.
Do you think they end up back in that four? Because I do. I don't know exactly the path. I haven't done a deep dive in terms of scheduling. But wouldn't it feel like they would overtake Georgia?
My hunch is yes. I'll look at Georgia's schedule in a second. First, though, let's hear from the gentleman who helps put this whole thing together. LSU deserves to be number one. Why?
We got two great teams at the top, LSU and Ohio State. And just like I said last week, the committee's really impressed with Ohio State and the consistent level of high play. But when you look at LSU's resume with the win over Alabama on the road, that makes their fourth top 20 win. And they're the only team in the nation with that. They're deserving of that number one ranking.
That's Rob Mullins, who was named the selection committee chair on February 1st, 2018. He, of course, was the director of athletics since 2010 at Oregon. Is it weird to you, by the way, that current athletic directors of current college
yes.
programs are the chairman of these committees?
Supremely weird.
Why is that
thing? All it takes is the quickest surface look.
Oregon, by the way, is number 6 in this poll. Now, maybe they deserve to be. They're 8-1. But, you know, if I'm at Utah and I'm 8-1 and I'm number 7, and the guy who's making the announcement is the AD at Oregon, I feel weird about that.
I feel weird about it. I mean, the old BCS where they would go, this is about finding the best two teams, and somehow it would never include, you know, Boise State because, well, who was it? Who had the biggest interest? It was the 5 power conferences getting together to figure out who the 4 teams that would make them the most money were. Just it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to deduce kind of what the motivations are. They just replace one system with another.
So here's Georgia's remaining schedule. And actually, Dar, if you don't mind sending Pete in here, I'm gonna have a college football question or two for college football Pete Medhurst. Georgia plays Auburn this weekend on the 16th in 3 days. 5-13 matchup. That's a brutal game for Georgia in Auburn. Maybe they lose that game. If they win, though, it should all but solidify their chances to stay over top of Alabama. That is a marquee signature win. They then play Texas A&M. They'll beat them. And they play Georgia Tech, who they should handle easily before a potential SEC championship
game. So Georgia is in the SEC East with Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, Missouri, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. By far the worst this year, at least, of the two divisions, you would say. So Georgia's got a path to the SEC title game. Alabama doesn't unless LSU drops a game, maybe even two with tiebreakers.
So the standings as of right now would be Georgia, if everything stays the same, will be in the SEC title game.
Uh-huh.
Because Florida is 8-2, Georgia's 8-1, and everybody else has a million losses. Tennessee, South Carolina, Missouri, those teams all stink. In the SEC West, which is where the big boys are.
That's where the grown-ups are.
LSU, Alabama, Auburn. Those teams are 9-0, 8-1, 7-2, respectively. If LSU doesn't lose, Alabama doesn't get to the SEC championship game, you'd see an LSU-Georgia final. So here's my question for college football Pete Medhurst. If the Georgia Bulldogs beat Auburn this weekend, they go 3-0 down the stretch. They finish the season 11-1, 8-1 in conference. They then would play, let's just assume LSU doesn't lose, LSU in the SEC title game. Am I correct so far?
That's correct.
If they lose to LSU in the title game, would it be held against them that they got to the SEC title game and lost and Alabama leapfrogs them? Because that doesn't feel right to me.
It does. It will, because Alabama's loss is to number one LSU. You keep forgetting Georgia's got that huge scab called South
that
Carolina.
South Carolina loss is bad.
They lost at home. So if Georgia loses again, they're out.
Is there, and I get that, the South Carolina loss was a disaster. And I guess the better question would be if they didn't lose to South Carolina, they got to the SEC title game, and they lost to LSU, the same team Alabama lost to, with higher stakes at the end of the year, my prediction would still be that Alabama would leapfrog them because the loss was further
and that could
removed.
Feel a little dirty.
That would feel dirty, and that's kind of my
point.
But
the eye test has allowed Ohio State to get in and eventually win a title, and the eye test has allowed Alabama to get in there before as well when Auburn played representing the Western Division. So it's not unprecedented for this to happen. The question has to be is, does the committee look at the Alabama loss to LSU truly as a 5-point game, or do they look at it as they were 20 points behind chasing,
yeah.
and every time they got within one score, LSU had a score to go back up 12, something of that nature. So we're looking at it on the surface and we say, oh, this was a 5-point game. It was 46-41. LSU was really in hand and in command of this game. Alabama analytically doesn't have anything else at this moment to hang their hat on. They do have Auburn upcoming as well. Auburn, while playing well, has beaten Oregon. If Alabama beats them, they're
a 3-loss. That's Oregon's only loss.
Right. If Alabama beats them, they're a 3-loss team at that point. So How good does the Oregon –
wait,
I don't
let me
care
click
if Oregon
on this.
Wins the Pac-12. You lost to a 3-loss Auburn
Hang on,
team
let's
with
stick
no
with
quarterback.
The SEC. Hold on. You're going way off the grid here. Alabama loses to Auburn.
They're down. They're out.
Done.
It's over.
If Georgia loses to LSU.
Georgia's still out.
So both are out, and then you're saying Oregon or Utah.
Georgia with 2 losses, forget about it.
With a South Carolina loss.
They would need massive chaos.
Got you. So what if – Oregon, does Oregon have a chance to lose again?
Sure, why not?
Well, did they play anybody good?
Well, they're going to play Utah in the Pac-12 championship game.
Utah's all right. All right.
So,
Utah's seventh.
So one of those two teams will disqualify the other by beating him in the Pac championship game.
Correct.
Okay, so then there's only one of those teams to worry about. Here's what I don't want. This will just sound like I'm anti the underdog. I don't want to see Minnesota in this playoff. I just don't. It doesn't pass the eye test to me.
Well, they beat a hell of a football team.
They
last
played a
week.
Great game. I watched that game against Penn State.
Aren't they underdogs this week on the road at Iowa?
Yes.
It wouldn't feel to me like that's one of the four best teams in the country.
Because their brand isn't one of the top four teams. But you have to acknowledge what PJ Fleck, quarterback Tanner Morgan have done. They took it right to Penn State. This was not luck this past week. They took it right at Penn State from the get-go. They took James Franklin by the neck and said, "Good deal, you're 14-0
right
off
the top." One thing real quick. Ohio State, now they got Rutgers this week. They'll win by 157,000 points. They closed the year with Penn State and Michigan.
What if they lose once?
This is my point. That's the path for somebody else. That's an Oregon could sneak in. That's an Alabama could jump back in. I think Clemson will sleepwalk to an undefeated season.
I don't think there's any question
ACC.
About that.
There's nobody to challenge them from the other side.
Correct.
It's a multi-loss UVA team.
Wait, so what
Virginia
if Ohio
Tech
State loses, Pete?
If Ohio State loses?
One game.
Still, when is it?
Let's say they lose to Penn State.
Do they
State.
Lose to Penn State or Michigan?
Yes.
And then beats Minnesota or whoever from the
right.
rest of the pack? One loss, they could still certainly have a path to get there.
As a number four.
They're better. I'd take a one-loss Ohio State over a one-loss Pac-12 champion.
All right, last one for you. Best four teams in college football. Forget these polls and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Best four teams in college football. Everyone plays a tournament right now.
Am I looking out. At? Am I simply doing eye test or am I doing analytics?
Whatever
your criteria.
Do I have to do what the college basketball tournament does? Do I have to acknowledge who you've beaten? Did you beat somebody on the road? Yada yada. Or am
I want to know Pete Medner's
who do I think
top
are the
four, teams
four
in
most
college
talented
football.
Teams in the country are.
Who are the best four teams in college football?
LSU and Ohio State are an eyelash away from each other, no question about it. If you want eye test, I think Clemson is still one of the top four teams. And if you want eye test, put me on a neutral field against any of those other teams, Alabama's favored.
I'd like that playoff.
That's my four.
Yeah.
LSU, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. John Clayton, longtime ESPN professor. Joins us next to talk the NFL. We'll go up a level. Talk about the fellas getting paid to play professionally. I don't want to give away the goods, but at 1 o'clock today, you'll want to be listening to the show. That's all I can tell you.
Whatever do you mean, Grant?
I'll just tell you that you'll want to hear the show at 1 o'clock today. It's an hour and a half from now. Set the appointment, make a note, tell your phone to remind you, just tune in at 1. You're going to want to hear the show.
Okay.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now is where we find our buddy John Clayton. You can read his work in the Washington Post locally forever on ESPN as the professor, one of my favorite all-time NFL analysts. John, great to have you back on the show. I want to start with your reaction to this Colin Kaepernick news. It's kind of odd. The league yesterday told he and his reps that they'll have a workout held for him that 32 teams can attend this weekend. They wouldn't budge on any of the details. But Kaepernick, it sounds like, is accepting the challenge. He will work out on Saturday for teams. What do you make of all this?
Kind of like a broken olive branch because, yeah, I just don't know how many teams are going to show up on a Saturday. I mean, if this was a Tuesday, it might be a better chance. But by doing it on Saturday, I mean, half the teams that are playing are flying to games. Okay, so you know the coach is not going to be there. The general manager may be at a college game, flying back then and going to the road game. And so then who's going to be able to go? Are you going to take time out of the schedule? I mean, the head coach is not going to be able to go. I mean, you pretty well eliminate them. And, you know, the teams that are on bye weeks, I mean, Seattle's not going to have anybody there because they've got Russell Wilson. You know, Green Bay's not going to have anybody there because they've got Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Tennessee will send somebody, but at this stage, I think it's one of those things where, you know, it's like, okay, we're giving you the chance to get back in the league, but we're doing it at a time that nobody might show up.
Well, who's a fit for him, John? You went through a couple teams, but it gets me thinking. Now, I think if you've got an established veteran quarterback or you're winning, the last thing you're going to do is bring in a celebrity backup quarterback where CNN wants to interview a guy who's not playing in your locker room. But then you look at the teams that are bad, say the Redskins or the Dolphins or the Bengals. They either have a young quarterback already they're trying to invest in. You don't want to cloud the room in that way. Or maybe you just decide we got to go get a kid quarterback. But he's 32 years old. I don't know if he's a fit for any of those teams either at this point. So who is the fit for him in terms of where a team would be in a building phase?
I mean, no, a fit would be Baltimore, but there's no reason for them to do anything because they got RG3 as the backup and Lamar Jackson. I mean, the reason I say Baltimore is because Greg Roman coached him in San Francisco, but there's no room at the end there. Yeah, I don't know where the fit would be because the teams that are really bad, they're going to be drafting quarterbacks next year. So they're not going to go for Colin Kaepernick. And you know that Cincinnati is not going to do it. So I really question what team's going to be there. Plus, he's been out for 3 years. It's not like you're getting somebody that has just been out of training camp and just cut by somebody. He's been out for 3 years. So it could maybe help in the evaluation process for the off season. But as far as instant attraction, I just don't see it.
John Clayton with us here on Grant and Danny. John, shifting here to Washington, just your overall impressions from the moment Dwayne Haskins was handled to now he's been named by Bill Callahan the starter for the rest of the season, you know, barring injury, of course, here. Just give me your impressions on how things have been handled in terms of Dwayne Haskins' development in Washington.
Well, I mean, I just think he's not ready. I mean, that gets pretty evident when you watch him play. But I guess at this stage, because, you know, November is usually the time when you start to go ahead and take quarterbacks when you're out of things and you do it. I mean, that's why I thought that probably would have been wiser for the New York Giants to do Daniel Jones in November than after 2 weeks, because you look at his 2-6 record and you look at the interceptions, you leave, you know, as the league leader in turnovers and all that stuff. So you kind of wonder, is that, are you advancing things by doing it? But when you're talking November, you're now talking, you know, the final 5, 6, 7 games and all that stuff. So I guess the timing is right, but I just don't think he's ready.
Let me shift to New Orleans as well. Is this a, if you're a New Orleans fan, I'd be a little bit concerned. I know this is just one game and you're entitled to a mulligan and it didn't go well, but it's basically been the Michael Thomas show on offense. And you've been kind of disappointed in Kamara, I would say, with the lack of production therein. But if you sort of deal with Thomas, let him get his keep out of the end zone, that New Orleans offense all of a sudden looks fairly pedestrian. Is that a sign of weakness maybe to come?
I don't think so. I mean, I still think they're the most complete team in the NFC, and they just had one bad game. But then also remember that Kamara has been injured. He missed the last 2 games. Same thing with Jared Cook, so they were just getting back. So maybe coming off the bye week, you know, they're a little bit rusty and a little bit behind, and so maybe that all played into it. Plus, they got a bunch of injuries on the offensive line, not long-term injuries, but they got kind of banged up there. It was, I just look at it as a bad game. And, you know, remember, you're not going to go through this season, and they were not going to go through the season 15-1. You know, at the best-case scenario, you hope to come out with 12 wins. And so you just kind of write it off. And really, a good coaching job by Dan Quinn, who revamped everything he was doing to try to set up with the coaching staff so they can try to take the bye week and beat the Saints. And then a lot of times what happens when you have these division games, you know, division games tend to be closer because you know, each team knows each other. And really, the Atlanta-New Orleans series really has been one of the closest in the NFL over the last, say, 6, 7 years. So, no, I wouldn't overread anything. I think they bounce back.
John Clayton's with us on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. What's your MVP ballot look like right now?
Okay, number one would be Russell Wilson. Number two would be Lamar Jackson. Number three would be Deshaun Watson. Number four would be Christian McCaffrey. Number five would be Aaron Rodgers.
Love it. As far as running backs go, everyone just says they can't win the MVP award. Is there any path at all for McCaffrey to actually win it?
Nope, not this year. I mean, it's like it's a quarterback-driven league, and you got quarterbacks playing at the highest level doing incredible stuff. I mean, Russell Wilson's out there with only 2 interceptions. You know, some of the best numbers in the league as far as throwing. Then you've got Lamar Jackson, you know, outdoing Michael Vick as a running quarterback, along with the fact he's completing 65% of the passes. And then you have Deshaun Watson, you know, breaking records and doing the things that he does. Not happening this year.
John, who wins the NFC East? You can include the Giants in there with a miraculous 6-0 finish to go 8-8, but I'm thinking between the Cowboys and Eagles.
I'd say right now it's starting to lean toward the Eagles the way the Cowboys are losing. Because, you know, and it comes down, because again, it's going to be 9 or 10 wins. I mean, it's going to be the 4th seed. I think that's pretty evident. And the problem is both Philadelphia, Dallas, and all the teams in the NFC East are feeding the 2 top teams in the NFC North. Because, I mean, you look at the record, what is it, like about 9-1, 9-2, the NFC North over the NFC East. And so that pulls down the numbers for the East, and rises the numbers right now for the North. And so what I can just see happening is that, Philadelphia, because it comes down to the Philadelphia-Dallas game in a couple weeks, who can win that one? But Dallas is, I think, really underachieved. The fact that, they're not getting all the passing with Dak Prescott, or they're getting the passing, but they're not getting all the whole thing as far as scoring. It's just been a little bit off, and that surprises me.
Thank you, John. Always love having you on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks,
John. Clayton's one of the best in the business. Our double play is next, and our Beltway Blitz is set for noon. We're Grant and Danny. You are locked into the Fan. For you. But right now it is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
I will be reviewing The Mandalorian tomorrow. I want to make sure everybody has a chance to watch it. I will talk Disney Plus on the morrow, GP. I want to make sure that everybody has their chance. But I've wanted to do this for a couple days. It's actually a serious thing, and it's pretty amazing. I went to a wonderful event on Saturday night. It was a charity gala for an organization called Hope for Annabelle. So you can go to hopeforannabelle.org to find out more. Annabelle is a three-year-old who suffers from an extremely rare disorder called alternating hemiplegia of childhood. Doesn't sound that bad. AHC, just an acronym. It is a, quite frankly, devastating disease. And the life expectancy is very short, and the challenges are infinite. It's basically like having autism, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, ADHD, different things kind of all at once, and it manifests itself in a million different ways. And typically what happens with rare diseases is the folks that are affected by it, both the patients and then their sort of immediate families, are sort of isolated, and they try their best to get, a grant, and they try their best to go the conventional path and, do a small little fundraiser, and they do a GoFundMe, and they see if they can get some care for the patient. Well, Simon and Nina Frost, who are D.C. residents, I didn't know Nina very well in high school, but we went to our brother and sister high schools. They've kind of taken the bull by the horns here, and they've sort of put into one big pot everybody with rare diseases. I won't say everybody, but a larger group with rare diseases. So in other words, what it means is, if you're with leukemia and lymphoma, that society, people are familiar with that. It affects so many people, and they should get their funding. They should get their fundraising. They should be able to meet every goal. But instead of kind of being out in the wilderness, they've put a lot of people into a larger bucket, and they're working with geneticists and some of the most brilliant scientists working on the cutting edge at this point to have everybody with this genetic research to be able to feed out of the same trough. So it's not just for AHC. It's for multiple sclerosis, which has affected my family. It's for cerebral palsy, on all the different things that are out there. And they've done an amazing job. They've been featured in the Washington Post, and they had their marquee event this past weekend. Everybody in the room was moved to tears, and no hyperbole. When you saw the video, when you saw what they've gone through, what this brave, incredible little girl and her wonderful spirit has gone through, the lack of answers and the frustration that they all endured for so many years until kind of finally landing on what this was. I would encourage you, again, to go to hopeforannabelle.org. That's hopeforannabelle.org. And even if it's something small, even if it's you spreading the word, that's important. And what they've done to this point should be commended. And I don't really have any other more profound statements to make about it than that. I will tell you that if you were there, you would have been as compelled, I think, as everyone else in the room was, to give and to do whatever you could to not only help this wonderful little girl Annabelle, but the hundreds of people, kids, adults, and otherwise, that suffer and don't get the same limelight as some of the more well-known kind of maladies that affect folks in our society through no fault of their own. So again, hopeforannabelle.org. You could read about it and give if you can. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing cause. And whenever you go to events like that, it just takes you back. And you're like, man, that it's so terrible. And mm-hmm. You feel like you're lucky, but also how bad it is that the kids are dealing with stuff like that.
Because you couldn't help but imagine. Every parent in that room is going, what if it was my kid? And then you can't help.
It is crazy how much it changes, too, after you have a kid.
Absolutely.
And you hear some of these stories. It's pretty ridiculous. That's our double play for today. Hey, real quick, Haskins talks early next hour. Wondering what you're expecting to hear. I think he's going to come out and he's going to do the nothing's changed for me routine where he goes, look, I've been preparing all season long. Look, I'm the starter. just a Wednesday for me. I'm excited for the opportunity. We got to play the Jets. This is about the Redskins and the Jets. I think he'll say all the right things, which would be great to hear. But anything of interest, you think, in terms of what we'll monitor or look for coming out of the press conference?
Content-wise for me, I just want to hear how comfortable he is. I want to hear, and I know you're right, he'll say the right thing, and I won't get enough meat on the bone here, but I want to hear, this is where I was, but this is where I am now. I want to hear about what's changed for him. I want to hear about his growth, at least in his own opinion or view.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get a little report card, so to speak, on what he's capable of today that he might not have been in week one. Or if he said something like, look, I didn't play early this year, and I'm glad I didn't because I wasn't ready, but now I am. I don't think he's going to say that. My guess is he was confident enough that he thought he should have been playing all along.
Right.
You want guys to be that confident, so there's nothing wrong with that. Certainly didn't look like it when he was on the field. But he finally gets to hold a press conference for the first time today, coming up this afternoon, as the starting quarterback of the Washington Redskins. And this is very different. You know, people have said, oh, he's already started a game, or he's played three times, and that's all well and good. This is now his team. As of yesterday, Bill Callahan said, it's Dwayne's team. This is Kirk's team. He takes over. He runs the huddle, and it means he runs the locker room. And if you've been named the third stringer, if you're Colt McCoy, or the backup if you're Case Keenum, you don't walk around telling people what to do like you did a couple weeks ago when you were starting a football game. That's up to Dwayne Haskins now. Practices are on him. Tempo's on him. And you kind of set the agenda for the entire organization. So be curious to see how that goes down.
Me too.
Today. At 1 o'clock, you'll want to be listening. Chris Ross is going to join us. That's all I could tell you. You're locked into G&D. And you are listening to your flagship home of the Nats and the Caps. A Beltway Blitz coming your way on The Fan.
Everybody knows it's all about giving thanks this time of year. Nobody knows that better than my guys over at Ted Brett Ford, who couldn't be more thankful for allowing them to serve you and your family for the last 60 years. That's right, 60 years in business. Doing something right over there. Right now, at Ted Brett Ford, and I mean right now, your F-150 HQ. Get up to $16,300 below MSRP on a 2019 Ford F-150 truck. $15,000 off the MSRP. The MSRP is just getting beaten up. I mean, the MSRP is getting pummeled over here on a new 2019 Ford Mustang. $9,000 off that MSRP 2020 Ford Explorer. Not the 2019, the 2020 Ford Explorer. $8,000 off the new 2019 Ford Ranger. Tidy little 55 Hyundai off the MSRP on a 2019 Ford Escape. Now, is that it, Danny? No, it's not. Rhetorical radio listener guy or gal. In addition to all those great prices and money off of the cars, you got no payments for 60 days on all those bad Jacksons. That's right. No payments for 60 days in honor of what did we mention at the beginning? 60 years in business. That's right. So when you do pay them after basically 2 months, you pay them a lot less than you should. Go see my guys at Ted Brett Ford. They're the best, Gary. The best. Fairfax Utility. ClickAwayTempers.com. And when you go, go on there.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.